Clone Wars spread.
Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network's Look Back at the Clone Wars micro-series.
Against this threat, upon the Jedi Knights falls the duty to lead the newly formed Army of the Republic.
While the full-length Clone Wars show is on summer hiatus, come back to RepublicForces.com this summer and join Dan, Jen, Jerry, Barrett, and Nathan as they look back at all 25 episodes of the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars series that aired from 2005 through 2008.
You have been selected for this task because you are the best, the elite. You all know what to do.
In these matters, trust your insight, we do. May the Force be with you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, your source for all things Star Wars animation and our continuing coverage of the Clone Wars micro series from Cartoon Network. And joining me this evening, just as they have been all summer long, are Jen.
Hey, guys.
Nathan.
Hello.
Barrett.
Hello, everyone.
And Jerry.
Hey, guys.
Now, tonight we are going to be discussing chapters 17, 18, and 19 of Volume 1 on the DVD, or Episode 7, 8, and 9 of Season 2, depending on how you're keeping score at home. But since these episodes, honestly, are all part of one big scene, don't expect us to kind of call it out, because this one goes pretty quick through all three episodes. At least that's how it struck in my mind. What did you guys think?
I actually had to go back and look at Wikipedia to see where the episode breaks were, because my copy of this is all, it just plays nonstop. And I kept going and going. And I was like, when does this episode end? This is really long. Is this when they started getting longer? I was like, wait, no, I just watched all three. Whoops. So they flow really well. I liked it.
All right. Barrett?
What I really, really enjoyed about this is the character models, Anakin, the way they have Anakin looking. You know, with the gold hand, and I love the fact that he has his hood on, you know, when he's walking through the forest, and all of the troopers are being taken out. And, you know, whenever Anakin has his hood on, I automatically just start feeling Darth Vader, you know, Darth Vader, dark side. And I don't know why I feel that, but, with his hood on, walking through the jungle, walking through Yavin, which, you know, Yavin has a big history in the Star Wars universe, and I'm glad they used Yavin, but I wanted to ask, you know, is there a particular reason why they used Yavin in this episode and not a different planet, or it just happened to be Yavin?
The same thing as almost always, right? Where they like going back to the same places over and over again, kind of like Tatooine's often the beginning of stories, in a sense. Yavin 4, at least within the EU, is often sort of the end cap of stories in a lot of ways.
Well, they've used, I know about Yavin in the EU, where they, and even in the regular, where they've used it as a rebel base, and, you know, Yavin was used, the Sith had used Yavin and all of that. So I like seeing, I kind of got Darth Vader out of it, and I liked the character model of the gold hand and the braid, and he's, you know, the older Padawan Jedi Knight, and I really dug that. So that was my favorite part of the episode so far.
You know, kind of going back to the original question about how these felt, I mean, it really does feel like one long arc in a sense. I mean, it really is fun. I would actually say that the action sequences that we get here, not necessarily including the whole Predator, like all of a sudden she's stalking through the jungle using the Force and the clones are disappearing, you know, what, 10, 15 of them or however many, they're just going, whoop, 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 they're gone. Not counting that, which is a little goofy, and maybe one moment in the actual fight where Anakin sort of gets splattered into a tree with his arms all sticking out by a huge, like, actual tree, not just a branch or something that slams into him.
Like a la Elmer Fudd?
Yeah, exactly. But minus those, even if there is some exaggeration to it, I gotta say, this is probably my second favorite lightsaber duel in all of Star Wars visual media, hands down. It's the battle between Obi-Wan and Anakin in Revenge of the Sith, and it's this for me, because it's that thrilling to see it, and it never gets old. Going back and rewatching it several times leading up into discussing it here, because of times we thought we were going to record, weren't able to, and all that kind of stuff, or when I thought we were going to record and realized, oops, I'm looking at the wrong calendar date, I've rewatched this thing, and it doesn't get old. That is pretty telling. Unfortunately, it took us 16 chapters to get to this point, and I remember, you know, talking about the idea of everything kind of flowing together into one episode. I remember when this was airing nightly, and this was the sequence of episodes that had me basically cussing at the TV as soon as it was over every night, going, "That's it? Where's the rest of it?" Because it's that interconnected. Most of the other episodes, you at least feel like there's sort of an end, and then it comes back, but these are basically cliffhangers. You've got Asajj Ventress standing on top of what's left of the Azure Angel, saying that she's about ready to kick his butt, and then at the next cut, you've got them standing, one on top of one of the Massassi ruins, one down on the ground, with the rain coming down on the lightsabers that look so cool. I mean, this is one of those most thrilling sequences, and when it aired, we had to wait 24 hours, or what, 23 hours and 57 minutes each night to be able to see the second part. I'm glad we've got it in quick succession here, and that we're discussing it all on one episode of the show.
Yeah, I think this was a really well-done grouping of episodes. I thought, and I agree with about everything Nathan said, and the only thing I would add is just how intense this got at the end when Anakin's just really putting the final number on Asajj with the lightsaber. It just had a really good story. I loved all that stuff with the clones. It was goofy, but for some reason it was really fun in how goofy it was. You know, almost like the Mace Windu part of it. And I guess we'll talk that more later. But overall, just I really enjoyed this. I think these are really three good episodes to kind of lead us into the finale for this first, or I guess the second season.
You know, I'm right there with you guys. This is my favorite animated lightsaber duel by far. Probably ranks right up there with some of the greatest lightsaber duels from the actual movies, which ironically, my favorite lightsaber duels have all been a prequel, even though I don't like prequel. But anyway. But just the battle and just everything about these episodes flow together. And like Nathan said, before you know it, you've gone through all three episodes. And if you didn't have the DVD, you had no idea where the breaks were. But very good. Enjoyed it very much. I know we've all got our points that we want to talk to on these episodes. So we will jump right in.
Everyone's talking about the lightsaber battles. One of the things I must have, like, the sense of humor of a five-year-old, because you guys are saying how goofy the first episode was with people, like, the clones getting bashed back and forth. I was dying during this episode. I thought it was hilarious. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but just having them getting whacked all over the place and flying through the air, and then just Anakin's deadpan, like, something's not right. Like, I was, like,
that's the best.
I was dying. Like, I couldn't keep it together.
What was great is when he said, "I can feel it." Really? They're flying all around you, dude.
You realize that's why the dark side is able to move. That's why Palpatine is able to maintain his Sidious identity for so long without Anakin figuring it out, because Anakin is freaking dense.
Well, I kind of took it as that it had to do with the planet itself, that Yavin itself has some sort of dark side quality that was able to enhance Ventress in some way, where she was able to use that planet. And so that's why the question is, you know, was that planet used in some way on purpose? Because I just took it that the planet had enhanced her dark side abilities.
Totally time to email Leland and say, we've got a retcon for the craziness of the old Tartakovsky series. I like it. You know, this is one of those planets it shows up a lot in Star Wars. You've got going way, way, way back. You have the end of the Great Hyperspace War, which was that big conflict between the Sith Empire and the Republic, and Naga Sadow, one of the last remaining survivors of that, he takes his Massassi, sort of these red-skinned sort of offshoot of the Sith people, takes them to the moon of Yavin 4, and they start building those huge temples. Then eventually, once he's dead and gone, you have Freedon Nadd shows up and starts learning from his Sith teachings and such. And then later on, when Exar Kun, about 1,000 years after the Great Hyperspace War, when he needs a teacher, when he needs to become a Sith, well, where does he go? He goes right to Yavin 4 and learns from the spirit of Freedon Nadd, winds up blowing him away, basically. Where does Exar Kun wind up trapped at the end of the Sith War? On Yavin 4, inside the temple, so he can show up again later, and so on, and so on, and so on. Luke puts his Jedi Academy there, of course. In the classic trilogy era, it's where the Rebel base was once they left Dantooine. They left Dantooine. I mean, it's iconic, but at the same time, it also, now looking back on it, I just consider this, well, it's just part of the way they've used Yavin 4 in the Star Wars universe. When it aired, I was angry. I was unhappy with the fact that yet again, we need to take them to some jungle planet, and if it's not Kashyyyk, oh, let's just stick them on Yavin 4. It's like the planets of the Star Wars films are the single most traveled planets in the galaxy that everyone should know about, but most of the time nobody does know about. I mean, it's like Tatooine is like the galactic crossroads of everything important that happens, but it's supposed to be far from the bright center of the universe and so forth. It bugged me at the time. Now, not anymore. In fact, I think it bugged a lot of people at the time because the message boards were kind of blowing up with it when people started saying, holy crap, is that really Yavin 4? And then once, you know, they had said specifically on the forums on the official site, yes, that's Yavin 4, things got a little contentious for a while. It just goes to show that just like what's going on with the current cartoon series, what excites people in a bad way, what brings contention in one generation or one era of Star Wars production is gone by the next. You know, the controversy just sort of run their cycles.
I can remember that being a point that struck me when this series first came out. It was like, oh, really? How many planets in the universe and are in the galaxy and we have to go to Yavin 4? And that kind of irked me. And now I'm fine with it. Now it's kind of cool. And thinking about how it was the focus of Sith for so many different generations, yeah, it kind of makes sense that maybe Asajj ran here if that was her plan. And I know that's giving them entirely too much credit. It makes me wonder, with all the stuff that all the times that we've groaned over the last three seasons, at least, of the current Clone Wars series, going, oh, yes, you have to do that because it was in the movies. 5-10 years from now, are we going to look back and go, huh, that was kind of cool?
Yeah, I really actually like the fact that's Yavin, because I guess I've gotten to the point in my Star Wars fandom that we've seen, obviously, the original trilogy locations, and those are the most familiar, the most comfortable places to go. George had a second round to create some new planets in the prequel trilogy, even though we obviously did go to Tatooine to some at some point because of Anakin and, you know, the Skywalkers and everything. But I like, past all that, going to familiar places. I mean, to me, I guess, to Nathan, your point, what you said earlier, when I look at it, it's like, yeah, if you're going to go to a jungle planet, make it Yavin 4, because I know where that's at. I understand Yavin 4. I get that. If they had put them on jungle planet, said, oh, no, that was some planet called XYZ, and it's just a planet we created for the series, I'm like, well, God, what a waste. Put it on something that would have possibly had some significance that people could have retconned even more significance towards later. I think that's cool. I'll take that.
I think it depends on how you do it, though, because in this case, it's just a location.
Oh, sure.
And that works great. On the other hand, we were talking back, I guess, for the third episode of this Republic Forces summer programming, we were talking about the Wampa. And somebody mentioned the fact that they came back to the one-armed Wampa, which is in the novel Darksaber. Okay, so Darksaber takes us back to Hoth. Fine, no problem, we're good so far. And then you've got the one-armed Wampa that Luke sliced up in Empire. That's when they take it and go a little bit too far. I think locations are much easier to justify reusing than especially background characters and things like that, or even lines of dialogue that we sort of groan about. I think locations are much less groan-worthy.
And we know it's always about location, location, location.
All right, so we've kind of alluded to the opening, well, I guess pretty much the first episode, quote-unquote, where Anakin is followed by the clones. The clones are all killed by Asajj in various different ways. Some of them stealthily, some of them not so much. And finally, both Anakin and the Republic transport are blown up. And we see Asajj stroll out of the forest through the fire to reveal herself to Anakin. And that's kind of where, and I know I said we weren't going to break these down episode by episode, but that's kind of where we start right into the heavy fight between Anakin and Asajj, with him kind of jumping tree to tree. And this was a good start, I felt. This was he's swinging from the vine. Honestly, what makes me laugh out loud every time I see it is the scene where Anakin is standing on that tree branch and she kind of snaps her fingers and the branch falls out from underneath him. That makes me laugh out loud every time. So this lightsaber battle had just went back and forth between action and just funny stuff. It was really good. And I'm going to keep going back to that.
What I thought was great is we often joke, and we've seen it a lot in Star Wars in the past with like Han Solo and, hey, my Falcon, my Falcon, my Falcon. What made Anakin really upset at Asajj Ventress? She blew up his car. It didn't matter that she threw around about 20 clones and blew up their ship. she messed with his car, and that's when he got pissed. I thought that was awesome.
Was it the car or was it the droid? Because he says R4.
Oh, they're one the same, really. I mean, you know,
especially on this, because he's hardwired into it. Yeah. Now, I did find it kind of interesting. I remember looking at this and saying, well, wait a second, he blew up the ship. Oh, well, that's why R2-D2 wasn't in it, because it's just like anything else. You know, if it's going to be something that blows up, don't make it one of the named ones that we actually care about. But they do make a point later on in this series of showing us the scene in which Padme and Anakin exchange C-3PO and R2-D2. It never would have struck me without seeing that scene later on that, oh, well, of course R2's not there. Anakin doesn't own him yet, technically. R2 is with Padme at this point. It just completely shot over my head the first time watching it.
The car, man. You can't mess with somebody's car. You know, you mess with the man's car, Jerry. You know, you'd be upset too. R4 or not.
Oh.
You know, you blew up my ride. You blew up my space, my ride. And you know that, you know, Anakin had modified it, you know, and had the ground effects and some radio and the whole thing.
The hyperdrive, which none of them ever had at this point. Yeah. Sure.
And that's when he took off his robe, you know, he was ready to go.
Oh, no, Baron, I didn't say that because I thought it was stupid. I get it. I think that's an interesting,
yes.
Bringing kind of real world just mannerisms, I guess, because if you want to, you know, in a parking lot, you want to mess with a dude, go key up his car. You're absolutely right.
That's very Lucas. I mean, wasn't Lucas focused for a very long time on like the street racing type of thing? I mean, he does the charity driving events all the time, or it seems like all the time. He keeps popping up online talking about the charity events he's driving for. Wasn't that sort of the impetus for American Graffiti, was his love of cars and them as an icon? So this totally fits that.
Yeah, it totally fits everything about Anakin, about the droids. You know, he builds droids. You know, his droid got blown up, and he modifies speeders and stuff. So it totally fit. So, you know, that's, you don't... Asajj, she knew what she was doing, you know.
I actually had a hard time reconciling this with the Anakin we see in the current Clone Wars series, because he's become so attached to his clones and his people and lost, like, really grates on him. And maybe I've just been reading too much EU stuff with him. But I was kind of jarred for a minute. I guess it can be explained because he's much younger here. But my first thought was, wow, he doesn't give a flip for these clones. Like, that's kind of cold. And so I guess maybe we see him develop that attachment later. But it was kind of funny to me that it takes blowing up his ride before he gets really pissed.
Well, can we maybe justify that by saying that these were clones he didn't want there in the first place? I mean, Obi-Wan sent them, and when they arrive, he's just like, oh, Obi-Wan sent you. Fine. You know, he's not really happy to have them there. I mean, granted, that maybe shouldn't make him totally callous to their deaths, but at the same time, assuming he was feeling them at all, Mr. Deadpan, but, you know, maybe that gives him some reason to sort of be very selfish about it and focus more on him and his things and, oh, those clones, they're just Obi-Wans?
Yes, yes, yeah. I kind of take it in a different way, where when these clones are getting beat up, you know, the way that these clones are portrayed, for me, they're either portrayed as stormtroopers or they're portrayed as clones, as heroes. And it seems to me that when they're going through the jungle, they're stormtroopers. And when they're getting beat up and thrown around, it's just a bunch of stormtroopers getting thrown around and not our heroes, not our Republic commando clones. And that's the feeling I got. It was Darth Vader with the stormtroopers. So we don't care. We don't care if they get thrown around and beat up like we would as if it was, say, Obi-Wan Kenobi, who was leading a battalion of clones where they kind of were more of hero-like. You know, and we wouldn't want a bunch of those clones getting beat up, or like in Landing in Point Rain and something like that, where, you know, where they're being portrayed as the heroes. I think here they're being portrayed as stormtroopers.
I don't necessarily think it's they're being portrayed as stormtroopers. We just aren't getting any kind of personality or characterization, because this show honestly doesn't have that kind of time. We got it with the arcs. We'll get it a little more with the arcs. But as far as getting any kind of personality, or hey, maybe I should care about these guys for the clones, we do not get that in this series at all. They are just there to blast droids and catch blaster bolts, both of which they do fairly well.
The writers don't even seem to really care all that much for the clones. I mean, Fordo, the red ARC trooper that gets so much play, gets given three different rank designations throughout the course just of this series. He's a sergeant. No, he's a commander. No, he's a captain now. Maybe it's battlefield promotions or something like that. I do think we should introduce a new verb into the discussion, though. Whereas you could say in, you know, the crappy movies, you got served. I think Berent just certain point of viewed us. That's exactly what he just did. Oh, yeah? From a certain point of view, booyah, and our minds are blown.
From a certain point of view. It's. I really think that, and you know, Dan, Rockstar, I think that your argument just solidified what I was saying, was that, you know, they're there just to take blaster bolts. And that's exactly what the stormtroopers did in episode 4, was they were there just to run around and get shot on, you know? And I think that's how they're being portrayed in this Genndy Tartakovsky. Not all the time, like I said, but in a lot of times, I think they're being portrayed as stormtroopers.
Yeah, well, this series does do a good job of showing us that in the end, they are one and the same. It doesn't go out of its way to give us the touchy-feely, softer side.
Faceless, don't clones, have any, yeah, you know, personality, and getting shot.
Exactly.
You know, just episode 4.
We don't get to meet the gooey center. We just meet the crunchy outside.
Yummy.
They're not colored like M&Ms yet.
That's right. They're not.
The Skittle paste the rainbow.
All right. So the battle begins between Anakin and Asajj. And once it got to the temple, then it really started kicking. Nathan talked about that scene where they're both kind of staring each other down and the rain starts and the lightsabers start to sizzle in the rain. That was just, that's freaking cool.
Doesn't kind of make you look back at episode 2 when Obi-Wan and Jango are fighting in the rain. You're like, oh, come on. They couldn't have done it in a high-dollar theatrical release. That would have been cool, too. But, yeah, we never seen anything like that. And you're like, wow, they're actually going to animate that. And I never really thought about that. Of course it would do that.
I never put the Jango and the rain fight together with this, but I feel really dense right now. That never occurred to me before. But because this is the first time I thought, without really thinking about it too much, that we had seen lightsabers in the rain. Wow, I kind of wish they had gone back in and done something with that in episode 2.
Well, there is a 3D movie coming out. It's possible.
It'll be like plumes of little like water vapor blasting you in the face when you're seeing it.
Yeah.
No, I think I didn't make the connection with the Jango Fett fight either. What got me was, remember back when they were talking, I guess it was at the beginning of this last season of the Clone Wars, where Filoni is talking about how much they really want to do the water, and here's how they do these water effects. And I got to tell you, I mean, they looked all right, but it was just water, you know, when viewing the stuff in the Clone Wars series. But they use the water with the imagery great here. It's not just the fact that, yeah, they've got the water coming down, and so it's a fight in the rain, but you've, of course, got it sizzling on the lightsabers. But even when Anakin goes in the temple, he's walking through a water puddle, and you see the distortion of the blade as reflected in the water puddle. I mean, they use water more effectively in this animated series than they have in anything else, and I bet you this cost a lot less to make. Granted, though, it's a completely different type of production, but they probably shouldn't be so proud of those technological terrors or technological waves they've constructed in the current series when they were used so much more effectively here.
Nice.
Nice.
That was nice. Nice.
We were given points in this discussion. I think you have gotten triple bonus with that one.
Not only do we get the iconic in the rain that we should have referenced in episode 2, but we get the force pushback move that we don't see before, where you can have someone do a force push at you. And if you hold your ground, you could push back on that force push and not get pushed back. And I think this is the first time that this was used a lot. And it showed the strength of Anakin and his mindset, you know, of getting the job done, of never giving up, of barreling through. That, to me, is just as iconic as them fighting in the ring with the lightsaber, is those able to repel those force pushes. You know, because we see that afterwards in the current Clone Wars series.
We also see it in episode 3. You get that moment where Anakin and Obi-Wan come at each other and their hands are right there close to each other, almost patty cake level, and they're trying to force push each other away too. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that I wonder who came up with that for this series. I mean, it seems like an obvious thing, but you got to wonder if this was something that Tartakovsky came up with and Lucas said, wow, that's cool, I'm going to use it in episode 3, or if that was something that maybe Lucas himself suggested for the fight sequence, because it's always been a little bit iffy just how much influence Lucas had over this, because he was overseeing it, but he gave Tartakovsky a lot of freedom to move around in this too, more so perhaps than with Filoni and company.
But to actually see the that force push technique, pushback. I don't know what it's called. Maybe we should come up with a name. The force pushback move, or whatever it's called.
No, wait a minute. He already got to coin a new verb. Now he gets to coin a force move. Come on.
The force pushback. The force pushback. I think I like that. But what it did was it brought in, you know, that any Jedi could do it. You know, if you're determined enough, you know, any Jedi could do it. And to see that, which just it was very exciting to see that, you know, it kind of just opened up. When you see a new Jedi move, it opens up a whole new, a whole new world of possibilities, you know, because when you think you've seen everything and then you see something as cool as that, then you're like, oh, man, you know, what's next? What else can we do? And then they give us the shatter point.
There is another force power that we could probably extrapolate from this. I find it rather amusing. This kind of goes back to sort of the same line of thinking, though, as figuring out Asajj Ventress's birth date based on puberty, so maybe not so much. But the other force ability we see here constantly is they keep attacking each other, and every time they force blast each other, force push each other, it's like more and more clothes fall off until Asajj Ventress and Anakin are basically wearing tops. I mean, there's no robe anymore. They're wearing the tops that are like their skivvies, basically, like they're long underwear or whatever, or short underwear that they'd be wearing underneath everything else. So I'm thinking that if they are going to attack each other constantly, but the only stuff that gets blown off is the stuff on top, force-resistant underwear, right? But it's kind of cool. You basically have a battle-damaged look to these characters, and you actually don't see that very much in the current series. So the fact that that is something, I mean, granted, it ends up kind of weird. They're basically standing there in complete clothing. It's just had layers blasted off of it, but you don't really get a chance to see battle damage all that much in a CGI-based series because it all takes extra modeling to get rid of this layer and that layer and all that kind of stuff, whereas you can do that kind of thing in animation. I actually wonder if this had gone on as a cartoon series this way instead of CG animation, if maybe we would have seen a lot more variance in the character designs than what we see in the CG series because it wouldn't have cost them a bunch of extra money to make new character models.
Yeah, I actually noticed that about, well, I've always noticed about Anakin, but I actually noticed that about Asajj's clothes when I was watching it again to review it just before we started recording. I was like, wow, Asajj her clothes got pretty thrashed up too. So it's not just Anakin who took the beating. It's very interesting, though, that once he gets ticked off, after we see that scene where they're chasing each other and it's very, very... what's the word I'm looking for? There's a lot of imagery used as far as the colors. Anakin's blue and she's red. He starts throwing back some of the same tricks that she threw at him in the forest and knocking the crap out of her just the same way.
Speaking of imagery, the end of the battle is wonderful because by the time they get to the top of that plinth or whatever they're on there, everything is red. They've got the giant red moon behind them. They've got her lightsabers. He's lost his, and everything is red. And when he's kind of hacking at her with the one lightsaber that he steals, it's very reminiscent of Luke in Return of the Jedi when he's hacking at Darth Vader's arm, and it's interesting how those played. I really like that image.
You've also got those flashes that come in there as he's hacking down on her, like the flash of Qui-Gon and so forth. It's really handled a lot better than Lucas himself handled it with just the Anakin, no, from Liam Neeson in episode 2 when he's slaughtering the sand people. Here you really get the holy crap, look at the decision he's making here, whereas you really don't get that, at least in terms of the filmmaking, from episode 2.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I really liked about this overall battle is how well they integrated Asajj and Anakin's usage of force powers along with the good lightsaber battling. It wasn't too much of either. It was very sensible, tactical uses of a force push or throwing an object while I come at you. You know, I distract you, then I come at you with this lightsaber attack. And seeing just some of the ways that they would both cut the things flying at him, I thought was really cool looking. And when Anakin just loses his lightsaber and just grabs the arms of Asajj Ventress, and just like the whole mindset of Anakin and the whole tide of the battle just changes to where Anakin is going to end it now because he wants to, and just takes that lightsaber from her and goes ape all over him. I just thought that was just the most intense thing that I don't even think they ever duplicated in a prequel film.
I agree with you, Jerry. And not only that, this is at the point in the story where I start feeling bad for Asajj, because I know Asajj's background, where she came from. And what she's really trying to do here is she's trying to impress a master to be accepted, you know, and to be trained. And this is the reason why she's attacking Anakin. And she is a pawn. And I start really feeling bad for Asajj right now. You know, I know Anakin is the hero, and he starts whacking and hacking at her, and she starts feeling scared. And I started feeling bad for Asajj. I'm like, you know, she's just a pawn in this. And she was sent on a death mission, basically, and Anakin's going to take her out. And I started feeling, you know, a little bad for Asajj Ventress here.
Tell you, when I feel bad for her is when Anakin's got her by the arm with his mechanical arm and he's starting to squeeze. And I don't know about you guys, but I think of that scene in Shadows of the Empire where they're telling Luke that he needs to get a grip on figuring out his mechanical hand because he just bent the crap out of a metal table by getting too excited and squeezing it, and thinking, wow, if he's lashing out on her, yeah, that could have gotten really messy.
I love that. I like to think that he broke her hand, because I like the fact that he is showing the metal and he is not hiding the fact that he's part machine, and he's using it to win the battle. And it's used so well. I mean, it's bravo.
It was used so well that I think a lot of people, when watching the series, I know, again, in some of the message board discussions at the time, were looking at some of the early shots that they were showing from episode 3 and saying, why doesn't his hand look like that in episode 3? Only to wind up finding out that when they finally bring about volume 2 or season 3 of this, they're going to give us the reason why he doesn't have the golden hand anymore. I thought that was such a stroke of brilliance to focus on it so much and then give us the reason for why it's not going to look like that later, so it doesn't just become something that's focused on as essentially an error continuity-wise as you go along. I got to wonder if they were planning on doing that all along, or if it was just something they felt like, hey, we got a chance to do this, so let's throw it into season 3.
You know, speaking of errors, though, did the Genndy Tartakovsky series here start the error of, like, Anakin's elbow growing back, though? Because didn't Dooku, I've always had a problem with this, and maybe it's just me, didn't Dooku cut off the arm above the elbow, like,
yeah,
on the bicep area?
He did.
Yeah. Because episode 3 does it too, right? To where it's just now more of a forearm thing, and he still has his real elbow.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wrong.
Why can't they clone his arm? Okay, they have cloning technology. Let's not. I mean, it's just, come on. They can, you know, they could clone his. They cloned his elbow, but they left the rest of it.
Yeah. It's the best we can do. We're still growing the rest of it. Hang in there.
But you know, I wanted to jump on something that Jen had said in an earlier podcast, last episode, where she said that Asajj Ventress here is not sexualized at all, where she is a character who is a monster. And even though that she's disrobed, like you said, Nathan, where, you know, she's down to her skivvies, she's not Ahsoka-lized. You know what I mean? It's not like if Ahsoka was fighting in her underwear. You know what I mean? It still gave Asajj her warrior look and still gave her respect without sexualizing her down. And
tasteful,
you know,
right, is what you're looking
for. It was
for. Tasteful.
Exactly. It was tasteful. And they rolled it over. They kept the same thing. They didn't change it, you know, and I think I really appreciated that about this episode.
Well, she's got some guns too. She's pretty
Yeah.
Well, that's how it's approached here, because Asajj is really not wearing anything more complicated than just a tank top, a sleeveless shirt, you know, something where she could work out in or whatever, to where it's just, you know, that the focus. And Jen, you I think you really land on a good point, is the way they've designed the costume at that point accentuates more of her athleticism and warrior like ways more so than distractness, thinking, oh my goodness, are they really showing that in that outfit? So it was a great choice in how to animate her battle damaged look.
Right. You think battle damaged, you don't think Slave Leia.
Even then, though, I mean, if we're going to make the comparison back to Ahsoka, it wouldn't matter. Well, it would matter, but wouldn't matter as much if this was Asajj Ventress doing it, because Asajj Ventress has always been purported to be an adult. She's not a 14-year-old character, which is where all the criticism of Ahsoka came in. I mean, nobody criticizes Ayla, well, few criticize Ayla Secura for her outfit as much as, say, Ahsoka. It's not a matter of culture, and it's not necessarily a matter of what series it happens to be in, because certainly Ayla Secura with her, you know, skimpy clothes and ghetto booty is certainly in the new series. It's an age thing. Even if they had blasted Asajj Ventress down to something a little less tasteful here, I still don't think it would have gotten the same type of response that Ahsoka's attire has, given the age.
My question is, how does Asajj survive this fall? And the coolest thing I've ever seen is when Anakin throws the lightsaber over the ledge. It's like, here you go. I mean, that's cool. So how does she survive? Do we have a backstory on that?
Well, as she gets nearer to the bottom, she remembers that one of the lessons Dooku taught her was how to levitate her shoelaces, just as he did in the arena. And she's able to fly down and remain unscathed.
I was thinking it was more a thing. It's more a thing when you take Night Sister blood and you take them to Kamino and start splicing things together, you get what is known as the Wile E. Coyote gene. And that explains everything.
So there is no definitive story how she survives. So that is something that could be written in the future, correct?
If they don't completely blast this micro series to crap with the new one.
Well, you also have the issue of not only how does she survive, which they just assume she does, there's also the how she gets off the planet. Now, I think the assumption has always been, and I haven't seen a story on this, but an assumption that, well, the Separatists just come and pick her up. Well, how did they know where she ran off to? I mean, her ship gets taken by Anakin to leave the planet, or to leave the moon. So here she is, stranded, probably in some pretty bad shape. At what point does she leave? To see maybe a survival story of Ventress set on the moon, what she has to go through to make it off the moon, to survive in the wilderness, that'd be really cool. Maybe add some Sith spirits or something with the temples and everything there. They'd never do it, though. You almost never see stories that are based specifically around this micro series unless it's something meant to retcon or fix something. So maybe they'd mention it, but I doubt that they would actually tell a story about it. Just like with the current series, you generally don't see references to the current series outside of the comics, digests, and video games based on it, so you can't make that easy jump from that to the rest of the EU. They got this weird thing about when there's Clone Wars animation, they're going to encapsulate it and insulate all the rest of everything else from it to the point where it's really hard to connect, to make that jump if you're someone who's watching the cartoon for the first time.
All right, so as Barrett mentioned, Asajj goes over the edge. Anakin nonchalantly throws her saber after him, but not before he screams to the four winds. And thus is the end of these three episodes.
Are we going to skip over the fact that what Nathan mentioned about Qui-Gon or Obi-Wan and Yoda obviously knowing that Anakin has went to the dark, is using dark side powers to win this battle, and they don't say anything about that?
Do they know it? I thought the idea was that just as he's yelling and screaming and he's you know, bearing down on her, it's like all the things that flashes through his mind, all of the training and the teaching that he's had all being kind of thrown out the window. I didn't think that they were necessarily saying that they were sensing it as it was happening, except perhaps at the very
really?
End.
With Nathan? Well,
you've got Yoda saying, you know, things have gotten darker, but that's not until the end of 20. That's not till after Grievous starts going after the Jedi on Hypori. I really never got that sense. Of course, then again, I thought that Ventress and the cat person were different people, so what the heck do I know?
But if you go back...
That's true, Nathan. What do you know?
Nathan knows a lot. If you go back and you look, they have a terrified expression on their face. They know. I mean, I just took it assumed as, you know, is Yoda and Obi-Wan, who are connected to Anakin, realized that he was using the dark side of the Force. And I just wondered if there was a reason why it hasn't been mentioned, because I don't think it ever is mentioned after that. And it's a couple times that, you know, you have where Anakin is going crazy, is using the dark side, and nobody seems to really say anything about it.
See, I took that more of just a nod back to what happened in episode 2 when he went all bonkers on the sand people and Qui-Gon yelled from the netherworld and Yoda felt, oh, he's in great pain. This was kind of him seeing flashes of how they would feel. I mean, because Well, Qui-Gon's dead, so he's not feeling a whole lot unless Anakin has such intense feelings that they stretch beyond the grave on a regular basis, in which case he really needs to get some help. But I saw that more of walls breaking in his own mind, trainings that he'd received from Yoda and Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon when he was young, things that they had taught him being cast aside as he just gave into blind rage.
Just to wrap up just this, and I think the general consensus that I've had on every one of my viewings, this really is what Star Wars should be. There should be a moral choice involved. There should be some kind of character arc to the main character of it, in this case, Anakin. Action with humor. Humor that's maybe sometimes over the top, but not something that falls back into kiddie. But even Anakin getting squished by the trees, smacking him into the other tree, still, I mean, it's goofy. But at the same time, in the context of the rest of the episode, it doesn't detract from it. It's not like the animal farting at Jar Jar, you know? This, to me, this three-episode stretch, this is what Star Wars should be most of the time.
It does sadden me in some levels that at this point in time, how well other people are doing Star Wars compared to those who are closest with it, and I'll leave it at that. But, I mean, I kind of feel like even though George Lucas was involved here, it seems like Andy Tartakovsky had a little bit more of a go off and kind of do what you think Star Wars would look like if you were to do it in a Samurai Jack sort of way. And the end result is not half bad. Dirge aside.
Samurai Jack in space!
Well, you know, we say that this is something that George just checked on, basically. He didn't have an active hand. That was just because he was off having an active hand in Revenge of the Sith at this time.
I know that at least by the end of this, he was already working on episode 3. I actually got to wonder whether or not in leading up to the first chapters of these, if he was maybe even still in post-production on Attack of the Clones. I don't think so. But I'd have to go back and look and see when the production actually started. But yeah, Lucas was actively involved elsewhere. Lucas's influence here seems mostly to be, hey, let's use these characters to set up this that's going to be happening in the film. Of course, he was also saying the same things to the Lucas books folks, so we wind up finding that chapters 21 through 25 become a mangled mess of continuity. But up to this point, it's not going half bad.
And there's my point. Maybe what the current Clone Wars series needs to be better is for Lucas to go make a movie.
You know, the best thing that could happen to Star Wars right now, in my opinion, is if he hands everything over to Katie, because she seems to have the only understanding of the Star Wars universe. She understands what we want. She understands what characters are supposed to be. She understands the universe. And I think that if he hands over the reins to Katie, I think that the Star Wars universe will explode all over again, in my opinion.
Then you got people like Christian Taylor, who wrote the Mortis trilogy. He wrote for Lost, and he wrote for Six Feet Under. Oh, that may explain why it didn't explain everything. Yeah. Although I like how Insider refers to the Mortis trilogy as taking the show to epic heights. Yeah.
You know, I'd use the Mortis trilogy like I would
well,
use
if you go,
Dick
if you go
working
high
at Denny's
your love,
on my
right?
resume, okay? You know, I put working at Denny's on my resume when I was 19 like I would use the Mortis trilogy. Let's just not bring that up.
No, I do find it interesting that he's a guy that wrote for Lost, though, because it would explain that penchant in the Mortis trilogy for not really explaining a whole lot. And in a sense, that's sort of where the Clone Wars microseries is going to wind up going. It will have its moments that don't get explained, but it doesn't try to explain them. It just leaves it up to the interpretation of the viewer. But I'm right there with you, the idea that Katie Lucas could pick it up. Or Hayden Blackman, bring him back in now that he's writing comic series, but he's not with LucasArts, for instance, anymore. Bring him back in. It's a changing of the guard right now. Sue Rostoni has just announced her retirement from being the editor that's been over all the Star Wars books and some of the Star Wars comics since 91. Now is a great time to see some change in Star Wars. Will we see it? I doubt it.
Yeah, you know, Katie Lucas wouldn't be able to do it all. But she has she's lived it her whole life, and she has the understanding that George, like I know him, Mr. Lucas, used to have. She has it now, and, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in C6, you know, maybe we'll hear some announcements and some changes.
But if it's Lucas's idea, it is his vision. Don't you know that he meant for the Force to be tied into microscopic organisms ever since 77?
All right. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to hear our continuing discussion about the Clone Wars micro series. Hope you all enjoyed these episodes as much as we did. I want to thank Jen, Jerry, Barrett, and Nathan for joining me as usual. And we will see you all back next week. We will discuss episode 20 and the tremendous impact it had on the fan base and the ripples that it sent of both excitement and shock. But we will talk about that next week. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Hey, thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Rockstar! No, I'm just kidding. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
Okay, here's the thing. The last show you just posted.
Yes.
I always I had trouble getting sleep last night. Got to bed kind of late, so I.
So you listen to RFRN to help you get to sleep.
I'll do that. I'll listen to Now Plan. I'll listen to these shows just to kind of, you know, hear something, and it puts me asleep. But last night, since I had trouble sleeping, I kept waking up every so often and hearing different snippets of the show. And dude, that is wicked. All right, I'm gonna put my chips away, and I'll be right back.
Okay.
And joining me all summer long. No, I'm just totally not on my groove anymore.
I think we broke Dan.
I'm broken.
It's been 3 weeks since we've recorded.
Yeah. Jen. Jen has to answer every question first tonight.
I think Jen just got scolded. I mean, no. Jen.
You know, I'm calling her out so that she doesn't have to leave a voicemail for her with her.
Dan, do you have an explanation for this, young lady?
I'm sorry.
I'll edit out where I call Jen out first. I just want her to answer first. Shut up. You guys suck.
I know, since Barrett.
Yes. Go ahead, Nathan.
I was going to say, since Barrett mentioned this, would this be a good time to mention the whole background of Yavin and why it's kind of a pivotal place in the Star Wars universe, or no?
Well, yes, I just wanted to add...
Well, I was thinking about giving my thoughts on the episode.
Oh, yeah, that's true, Dan. Well, you're the host. You don't count.
I just wanted to...
You can insert yours anytime. You're the editor.
Yeah, go ahead. May I add, Rockstar?
What? What?
I just wanted to add on to what Jerry said, and it also is what Nathan said. And the thing about this lightsaber battle is that it has these iconic imagery, right? And
we're gonna get into the imagery.
Oh, the iconic imagery.
Yes, we're just going overall on the episodes for right now. We're gonna get in deep. It's all right. Okay. We do that. We've got an hour on this one, so it's okay.
I didn't talk a lot on the last one, so I'm trying to make it up this time. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rock.
Who's eating?
That's not me. I'm done.
Guys are killing me here. I'm going to let Arnie host one of these, and then he'll get you all online. Whoosh. I'm going to murder my dog who found a squeaky toy just now.
Gert! Stop.
And on a side note, we know that there would never be a planet called XYZ. Please don't send us hate mail.
Well, you know, if you can have years in Doctor Who that have words like cup in the year, I would not put it past Star Wars to have a planet XYZ.
The engineer in me makes every random thing an XYZ.
Which means, or at least in theory, force-resistant underwear. Which means, take Anakin and Padme after their wedding night and such. Imagine the power and the fun that Anakin could have had just blasting off the clothes one layer at a time. Oh, I see what you've got there. Boom, oh, I see what's under that. Boom, I see what's under that. On the other hand, you could use force-resistant underwear and maybe make that like the chastity belt of Star Wars. That's why Anakin never got to first, second, or third base or around a home whenever she was in the leather in front of the fireplace and he was talking about how she was in his very soul tormenting him, because no matter how many layers he blasted off, he never could get past that bottom force-resistant underwear. No?
Dan, I have no idea how you're going to edit that.
I'm just going to go
just
ahead
like
and
this.
Say...
We want to thank everybody for tuning in.
I was going to help you out, Rockstar.
No, that stuff must
be the... I was going to say Jedi Mormons, right? Mormons.
See, I was thinking that's got to be made out of, like, the skin
underwear.
Of... how do you say that word?
Ysalamiri. There you go. Ysalamiri skin underwear. Except don't the Ysalamiri have to be alive for it to work?
Ysalamiri.
That's a little creepy. I feel like it's
never good, but like you've ruined it now. They're buried and gone. Wow.
It's Salamiri underwear. It's got to be alive for it to work. When that stuff really is creeping up on you, it's actually creeping up on you. Good night, folks.
Oh, wow.
And next, Tracy Morgan.
Too soon?
They're coming for you. See, I don't even know
Los
who
Angeles
you
or
is.
Atlanta.
But yeah, dude. Who's got the sirens?
Which major metropolitan city is that?
It's me.
Or is
I'll mute
it. Bead?
They're coming, yeah.
It's the fire department.
Oh, no, the Fairfield police are after me.
That's how Asajj Ventress escaped. An ambulance, of course.
Yeah, she went to Yavin Central Hospital, and I mean, don't assume the entire planet's void. I mean, we got jungles on Earth, right? There's an entire, you know, continent on the other side that's just, you know, got Yavin Disney. I mean, it's major.
There's a Starbucks inside the temple where the rebels put their base.
Hey,
yeah, they just happen to be on the complete other side of everything that happened in The New Hope. So they kind of came around rotation as the Death Star was blowing up. We're like, what the crap did we miss last night? Yeah. All right.
I'm looking for more just the rebels are scouting for a new base, and they're looking deep down to see where they can hide their ships, and they find this Asajj Ventress-shaped hole in the ground from where she fell.
Hey, is that a coyote?
Alrighty.
Get infected by the dark side of the Force. It's not just a phrase. Or better yet, seduced by the dark side if it's an STD. But that's going too far. Dan, were you going to wrap up the show now?
Yeah, when I started this line of questioning 15 minutes ago, I thought, wow, we did pretty good. We can knock this out 45 minutes, 45 minutes. Now... I keyed.
And that better stay in too, pal.
Nope, that's
that
all
STD
cut.
Stuff is golden. Oh, dang.
Yeah.
Let's wrap it up.
That's what the kids love. STDs.
Quick break. I have to take a quick break. So
wasn't the STD by. One of the walkers used in the Clone Wars? No.
All right.
An ASTD. Yeah.
Yes, it has to start with an A.